Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha.
And I am Tom Castles. This is a healthcare analytics news podcast, and if you enjoy it, be sure to rate, subscribe, and review.
It's also a MedTech Boston podcast. We recently purchased that wonderful website, which you can find online at medtechboston.com, and you can find healthcare analytics news at hcanews.com, and you can find us all over Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn.
So today we have a really fascinating guest. And a really fascinating story from that fascinating guest. He is Dr. Andrew Pecora. He is an executive at the Hackensack Meridian Group and a founder of the health data startup Coda. The interview you're going to hear at the end of this podcast is from a clip that we filmed in our studio here in central New Jersey.
So in most of that video, Dr. Pecora is discussing change in some form or another.
But we're not just talking about the, hey, that's a new shiny and cool object kind of change.
No. It's more like the, well, it's clear that this innovation can do great things for us, and here's what we need to do in order to get there, kind of change.
So it'd be difficult to say that this is probably most people's favorite kind of change.
Because most of us tend to like the flashy, the immediate, the low effort.
I'll point to myself as someone who's guilty of that from time to time.
Aren't we all?
People who are looking at Silicon Valley and all of these great tech startups and companies, well, sometimes it seems that they like the idea of change more than the sort of tough to achieve, actual, palpable kind of change.
So do you want a really stupid example of this divide, Tom?
Oh, of course I do.
When I was just a little kid, maybe fifth grade, everyone was going absolutely nuts about Y2K and the devastation that it could bring. So most people were afraid of planes dropping out of the sky and nuclear weapons blasting all over the world. But I remember the kids in my class, me, my friends, whoever, being really interested in Y2K and the change that it might bring.
Well, so let me guess, you guys were rooting for chaos.
Not so much that we wanted mayhem and death. It was more like, hey, the idea of this instant, all-encompassing change is just really overwhelming, and so overwhelming that you can't even fear it. It's interesting. It's almost exciting. I even had a Y2K sleepover that New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I hear you there. It's kind of like how people watch a movie about the apocalypse and think, hey, you know, what if?
Yeah, exactly. But here's where the divide between our two types of change gets really noticeable.
I think I might know where you're going with this.
Do you?
So in a weird way, we almost look forward to these sudden, super effective changes. But then we look at these longer term changes that we can definitely achieve or avert. Maybe climate change or, well, even value-based care. And somehow, these changes that are in our reach are just not as exciting.
Exactly. Immediate consequences versus a long, drawn-out struggle.
But here is the thing. A lot of these intense, abrupt changes, they never actually happen. And if they do, they tend to not have the big effects we thought they might.
Here's one really stupid example, because I'm full of stupid anecdotes today.
On fire.
The Segway scooter. Oh. So one day it's on the morning shows and everybody's talking about how humans will never need to walk again. And the next day it's a faded gimmick.
And meanwhile, the changes that demand a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, they're the ones that we probably ought to be pursuing.
And sometimes we do pursue them. Take one of the nation's largest health systems, and when it chose to cut the number of preventable deaths in its healthcare facilities.
Ascension Health began chasing this goal all the way back in 2002, and it saw some results early on, but it still wasn't until 9 years later that Ascension finally published its results.
So it took a lot of time to get to that point, and the work to prevent unnecessary deaths and improve patient safety is clearly still going on at Ascension.
But the last tally showed that the health system was preventing at least 1,500 avoidable deaths per year.
So today on Databook, we're looking at how Ascension Health made the tremendous organizational changes required to achieve this goal.
Because the change wasn't all about the tech. And it turns out, nothing ever really is.
The numbers are bad. Capital B, bad.
So we're taking you back to the dawn of the new millennium, just when healthcare is getting access to this huge influx of technology. And it's also taking a serious look in the mirror.
But sometimes introspection stings. like when the Institute of Medicine reports these shocking and frankly terrifying figures.
Every year, anywhere from 44,000 to 98,000 preventable deaths take place in U.S. hospitals.
Like I said, bad with a capital B. But the number doesn't just scare people. It also pushes some healthcare leaders to do something about it.
This brings us to Ascension Health. In the early 2000s, Ascension is the new child of two Catholic health systems in the Midwest. Although it was founded just a couple of years earlier, the health system's St. Louis roots go back almost a century. The folks there really wanted to serve their patients, their neighbors, and to do better.
So it's November 2002, and 120 Ascension Health leaders are meeting to embark on a huge journey. They want to support the health system's call to action, which is this.
Healthcare that works, healthcare that is safe, and healthcare that leaves no one behind.
These people are essentially figuring out which goals they want to reach and how they're going to reach them.
And they come up with this. By July of 2008, Ascension wants to eliminate all preventable deaths and injuries.
But that's sort of an unclear goal if you break it down. So the team refines it by looking at preventable death studies, and it comes up with a more grounded metric for success.
Ascension determines that 8 to 22% of hospital deaths might have been prevented. So it settles on reducing deaths by 15%, somewhere in the middle. By July 2008, the health system aims to save 900 lives per year.
And they have 8 ways to accomplish this. Reducing mortality, improving performance on national patient safety goals, ending adverse drug effects, no more birth trauma, and cutting down the number of pressure ulcers, falls, and hospital-acquired infections.
And finally, last but not least, fighting back against perioperative complications.
So the gist of it? Ascension is facing a monumental task, but its leaders are tackling so much more than a seemingly impossible goal.
Now, right about here is where things get tricky. Ascension knows its target and what it wants to improve to get there, but how to actually do it?
Enter the clinical excellence team. Some of the best medical and operational experts in Ascension are fully brought into the governance and operations of the system. Their goals and strategies have the board of directors' formal approval. Everything's rolling.
They begin striking annual mortality goals, and Ascension even ties executive pay to progress in this area.
Meanwhile, individual hospitals have numbers that they are responsible for hitting. They must develop and test drive new interventions. They have to be using evidence, experience. It's no joke.
So they used proven systems for something like reducing pressure ulcers. Keep the patient on the right side, turn them often, care for their skin, and align their calories correctly.
This kind of process is not easy to get to, but it goes on over and over again across the health system. A couple of hospitals try something, they measure its success, and then they share it with the others.
Then Ascension forms these units called affinity groups. They're made up of people who are working on the same thing, but in different hospitals. They meet online in person and share their performance scores.
It's all about transparency, the pursuit of the best systems to produce the best patient outcomes.
But none of this is possible without the right kind of buy-in up front. And Ascension has that. Maybe it's thanks to the formal vision, rules, and procedures it set in place from the top down and the bottom up.
Maybe it's the shared mission, the clear idea of what success looks like, or maybe even the understanding that all of this work is rooted in real clinical evidence.
Whatever it is, the process is resulting in a crazy amount of change, and somehow this turbulence isn't tearing down the walls.
So what ends up happening with all of this work, this back and forth, does it actually lead to anything?
There are a few ways to measure this, and Ascension uses them all in a study published in Health Affairs. Here's what we're going to check out.
So this system really gets going across Ascension in 2005. In that year, officials conclude that their work saves about 1,000 lives that they didn't expect to save.
And then the number climbs a bit to just under 1,500 the next year.
Then it jumps up to 2,000.
In 2008, it's more than 3,500.
The next year, it's more than 4,500.
And in 2010, Ascension saves 5,000 more lives than it expected to.
Now keep in mind, this is the high end of the statistical ceiling. The number could be as low as 1,500 lives saved per year.
Which, if you think about it, is still a really amazing feat. But the point is that this work is paying off. The changes are not only successful, they're no longer new. These protocols are just how Ascension operates. They're not changes anymore, they're just the way it is.
So Ascension goes on to get all sorts of praise for this effort. Researchers, healthcare, media, industry groups, they're all patting Ascension on the back.
And they're all digging into the numbers. They want to know how the health system pulled it off.
It was a cocktail of really good moves, as any of the work on this project makes clear.
But what's really striking is how clear everything is throughout the whole process. There's tremendous buy-in, a concrete vision, the tools and resources and brain power uniting around that goal.
Ascension makes everyone a part of the process. It's not some edict decided without input from hospitals and clinicians.
And so today, Ascension is the largest Catholic and nonprofit health system in the U.S. It's the third largest health system in the country. It's huge, and it's hugely successful.
And it keeps changing. It continues to try new things, all in the interest of better care, lower costs, all the things our people on DataBook want.
But here's the thing. Every healthcare leader is going through big changes. If you're not yet, you ought to be, and you certainly will be soon.
Especially when we look at things like AI, wearables, data, value-based care, these changes seem like they could be the really big kind of change that we talked about earlier. The kind of change that requires careful thought and planning and delicate execution throughout an organization.
So, as you stare into the unknown, maybe the story of Ascension can help you see through the fog, if only for a few feet.
So Dr. Andrew Pecora knows quite a bit about change. In his role as a chief innovation officer at Hackensack Meridian, he has seen any number of really cutting-edge projects get pushed forward and help patients, doctors, you name it. And he also founded CODA, the Manhattan-based health data startup that is really lobbying for better data-driven pricing that can help value-based care become a reality. Today, I have a clip for you of a conversation between Dr. Pecora and I that we filmed at MJH Studios. There are a lot of things that are new on healthcare provider executives' plates. What advice do you have for them to navigate these intense, sweeping changes?
So I think you gotta bucket it. So the best way to treat cancer is not get it. Right, so if I'm an employer, if I'm a citizen, if I'm a government official, I want to do everything I can to lower body mass index, improve exercise, improve diets, stop smoking, decrease excessive alcohol consumption, and use all sorts of technology to do that. And that will have a material effect at the population level to reduce total cost of care, right? It's just common sense. The second bucket is, the primary care bucket, the routine stuff. Instead of the classic go to the doctor to get my physical exam once a year, how about I get my genome sequenced for $500? I see what I'm really at risk for, and then I target those things through interventions. So maybe I find out, even though my cholesterol is high, I don't have the gene that's going to let me have a heart attack, so I don't have to take a statin. Right? So I see that bucket of, you know, you have a little something or you're getting your routine care. Then the third bucket is what I said before, is specialty care. And the thing about specialty care, the way to fix the problem in specialty care is kill variation. And that's why we built CODA. Why should people who have seemingly identical diseases and are seemingly very, very similar in their personal phenotype have a broader way of treatments offered to them at crazy differences in cost, like hundreds of thousands of dollars? Why? It makes no sense. But that's opaque. No one has transparency to that. Apple doesn't. Google's not going to. I mean, that's in the healthcare arena. But we do. CODA did that. CODA was built by physicians. And we've done cancer. Now we just finished behavioral health, which is you talk about the Wild West. You go into a clinic with a significant behavioral health disorder like schizophrenia or moderate to severe depression, and you see the array of things people are offered without any sense of does it really work or not, and is it right for this person or not. So I think that's where technology is going to come from the other side. So if I'm an executive, to finish on your question, first thing I think about is, how do I prevent my employees? How do I prevent, if I'm a state official or a federal official, the populace from getting the disease? And these are all the things I'm going to do. And I didn't even mention the social determinants of health. You know, better nutrition, exercise, avoidance of fast foods, things like that. The second is the more general, the annual checkup. Does that change? How's that doing? The third is the specialty bucket.
Let's discuss your role as Chief Innovation Officer at Hackensack Meridian. Is there anything on your radar now that wasn't a year ago? I feel like blockchain could come up here. I'm looking for a point of change in terms of a technology's perceived potential.
Well, I think, and this may not be obvious, I think the biggest disappointment has been the change in the rate of change of reimbursement. We had this 2 or 3 years that all we talked about was Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act and CMII, and they had this organization called PTAC, the Physician Technology Advisory Committee, and people went and pitched ideas with the hope, and it went nowhere. And most hospitals and physicians, more than 90% of what they do is still fee-for-service. So I think that's been the biggest disappointment, because had that been driven even a little bit, I think there'd be the follow-on effect with all the technologies. To me, I believe the greatest change and the greatest pace of change is being led in cancer with the advent of immuno-oncology, checkpoint inhibitors, CAR T cells, genomics, and precision-based treatment decisions, not just focused on cancer. I think it's going to herald a whole new way we treat disease. The idea that we can alter genes, the idea we can use CRISPR-Cas9. So the three big fields of science, life science, material science with nanotechnology, computational science, we're now talking about DNA computing, quantum computing, all of those things are coming together right now. So as Chief Innovation Officer, I'm trying to figure out what used to be impractical to impossible, as the technology overcomes that threshold where it becomes democratized and affordable, how am I going to use it to deliver healthcare better? So, as you said, telemedicine. Doing telemedicine 5 years ago was woefully inefficient. Now it's not. It wasn't secure. Now it is. So I do believe that a doctor sitting in their office, instead of waiting for people to come to them, and that inefficiency and cost of overhead, how about I sit in my office and I have a nurse going, you know, 10 nurses going to 30 patients out in their homes, and I'm sitting behind my screen and I'm talking to them, I'm communicating with them. Or even better, there's 500 patients being seen every day, of which I only have to look at the ones that have a problem and then zoom in on them. So I think that the way we think about care delivery is fundamentally going to change. And I'm setting up our organization to be ready for that change.
Dr. Pecora, we've discussed many innovations focused on external factors. I'd like to get a feel for the struggles that you face with your staff, whether it be prepping them for innovative change or anything else. Whatever you're seeing and how you're overcoming these challenges.
People are people, right? So they're motivated by, what is it, greed and fear? And they want to feel fulfilled, and they want to do something meaningful and all those things. And so the first thing is, what is the mission? In healthcare, the mission used to be fill up the hospital, make sure you're utilizing all of our services really well, and get everyone thinking about creating an environment that you want more and more people coming in. Now we're telling them we're going to do just the reverse. We don't want to fill up our hospitals. We don't want readmissions. We don't want too long a length of stay. And so that is a fundamental change, not just in how you organize your system, how you staff your floors, it's a fundamental change in how people think and what's value. So it used to be 5 years ago, I have a bed available for you. I'm going to get you in right away. You can stay as long as you want. We're going to do any test you need. and we're going to treat you like royalty. Now it's, we don't want you in. When you're in, we're not going to do much and get out. I'm sort of being silly to make the point. So when you do that kind of fundamental change, and particularly with people that have been doing something for 10, 20, 30 years, it's very hard. And I think we're just seeing that, the stress of that across entire organizations of healthcare delivery. The mindset of moving from volume to value is not just an economic issue, it is a cultural issue and an affect with an A issue for people who do it.
If you like DataBook as much as we like you, we would really love to hear from you. Rate, subscribe, and review this podcast. Let us know what's up.
You could reach out to us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. Remember, we are Healthcare Analytics News, MedTech Boston. I'm Jack Murtha. He's Tom Castles.
We're publishing fresh new content every day. We're hitting the pavement and meeting you folks at conferences. Come find us. We'd love to talk to you about our new ventures and how you might want to get involved.
I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles.
And this is DataBook.